Hi, I'm Heidi Waldrop. I'm short. originally, this talk was supposed to include methane as well as nitrous oxide emissions, but I had such trouble with nitrous, I just left it at that. We'll worry about the methane later. First, I'd like to thank my collaborators, Rick Todd, Ken Casey, and Andy Cole. And we are with ARS in Bushland, Texas, and Texas A&M AgriLife. The Texas Panhandle, where we're located, produces about 42% of the U.S. finished beef. And that means that we get production of about 5 million tons of manure every year. And let's see, which way is this? Okay. This is what our typical feed yard pens look like. This is a commercial feed yard in Hereford, Texas. It holds about 100,000 head at any one time. They're usually given an area of about 15 square meters per animal. As we all know, manure is a source of nitrous oxide with a global warming potential, 298 times that of carbon dioxide. In 2007, about 60% of the global nitrous oxide emissions were attributed to crops and livestock. In 2011, they estimated that about 18 teragrams of CO2 equivalents came from livestock manure, and 18 teragrams of that were directly attributed to beef cattle. And this is just an overview of nitrous oxide emissions in the different livestock sectors, and you can see cattle are producing most of the nitrous that are in our inventories currently. There have been a few studies that have measured directly nitrous oxide emissions from feed yards or other open lot systems. Most of them have used chamber methods, but there have been a few modeling studies as well as one done with a photoacoustic monitor. What I wanted to show, though, is there's a huge variability. This is in kilograms per head per year, from 0.06 all the way down to 4.3. So there's a lot of uncertainty in here. So what are the numbers really? This is busy, I realize this, but what it is showing is that there's a gajillion different ways to produce nitrous oxide. And we really don't know how it is being produced. It could be biotic or abiotic, and things such as redox potential are really playing into this. So currently, right now, we have a really poor understanding of the magnitude of our feed yard emissions. There's a lot of temporal and spatial variability within the pens over seasons, and we're not really clear on what the specific drivers are for feed yard nitrous production and emission. It's assumed they're the same as soils, but we really are not sure. We do need accurate methods to estimate these emissions under differing conditions so that we can get a good handle on the footprint of beef cattle in regard to global warming. So there are some process models, such as DASENT, DNDC, and they can predict manure-derived emissions. But these are based on soil information, and usually they use a function of ammonia concentration, temperature, water concentration, pH, diffusivity, available carbon, and other things to predict these emissions mechanistically. But we're not sure if these are correct for manure. So the goal here was to get an improved understanding of the driving factors for feed yard derived nitrous, and ultimately hoping to help refine these models. So this is what our manure pack looks like in depth. The cattle are brought into a system where it's just a soil surface pen, and as they continually excrete feces and urine, you get a mixture of soil and manure. It's called the interface layer. It's usually pretty thin. It's glade, it's anaerobic, and it's pretty much impermeable. There's hardly any leaching into the underlying soil layer. Over that, we have what we call the wet pack, which usually has a moisture content of 30 to 34%. It's anaerobic largely, a perfect place for denitrification to go on, but it's also very dense. It's a bulk density of about 1.5 to 1.8 grams per cubic centimeter. That's overlaid by a drier pack, and it's typically striated just because of the cattle walking on it, smashing it down. It's 12 to 23% water, and on top of that is a loose, fluffy layer of more excreted or more recently excreted manure. But this depth of this can vary from anywhere from 25 to 304 millimeters, and you can't really guess what it's going to be at any one place. So in general, though, increasing with depth is water content, pH, ammonia content, and nitrate content, excuse me. And decreasing with depth is total carbon, so your nitrogen to carbon ratios are going to vary. So spatial variability, you can see this is an aerial view of feed yard pens. You can see some wet spots. And so we're going to have differences within a pen because of the presence of water troughs. There's going to be spillage. It's going to be wetter there. Feed bunks, there may be more manure around the feed bunks. There's also going to be spilled feed. So the carbon content will be higher. Any mounds that are in the pens or loafing areas, the general topography, slope, and things like that, as well as the presence of urine spots, which are obviously going to be wetter and have a higher nitrogen content. And then there's also going to be temporal variability. It may be hot and dry, it may be wet and muddy, or it may be frozen. And given that these processes are driven largely by microbial metabolism, all of these factors are going to play into nitrous formation. And so we're going to have differences in temperature, precipitation. The animal diet's going to play in here. If they're consuming more nitrogen, they're going to be excreting more nitrogen, as well as pen management. How often are these pens scraped? So the objectives of this study were to determine the specific factors that are related to the production and the emission of nitrous oxide from beef cattle feed yards and use this information to develop some empirical models that we can use to predict nitrous oxide emissions. So first we did some nitrous oxide measurements. These were done by my collaborator, Ken Casey. During 15 different studies with the non-flow through, non-steady state chambers, these studies were conducted from 2012 to 2014 on two commercial Texas feed yards, Feed Yard A and Feed Yard C. Feed Yard A has about 30,000 cattle at any one time, and Feed Yard C, I'm not positive, but I think it's about 50. And so these, in all of these studies, we had two rows of five chambers installed in each pen. And these pens did not have cattle in them at the time. The chambers were installed the day that the cattle were removed, because if you leave them in there with the cattle, they mess with them and tear things up. So we went over that already. So the samples, this is what a chamber looks like with a cap on it. So they were capped, and gas samples were taken every 10 minutes for 30 minutes. And the nitrous concentrations were quantified with GC, and the flux is calculated with a quadratic method. And in addition to that, we always also took manure samples. We took samples of the loose, fluffy stuff on top, as well as the pack below. And so we determined on these samples, we total nitrogen, total carbon, nitrate, ammonia, carbon nitrogen ratio, percent water, and organic matter. Did some water extracts on them to determine available carbon and available nitrogen. And with those water extracts, I also included some UV vis characteristics to kind of determine how stable this organic matter in this manure was. And so looking at absorbances from 200 to 700 nanometers, we had the OD254, which will give you an indicator of aromaticity. The ratio of E280, I believe it is, to 465 is lignin content. E2 to E6 is proportion of non-humified to highly humified material. And E4 to E6 is humification, molecular weight, and aromaticity. And just to kind of show you what this looks like, this is from another study where we looked at the dissolved organic matter in manure taking from the surface, the pack, settling basin sediment, and retention pond sediment. And so this is our absorbance over different wavelengths, and this is just what the spectra look like. And so this See that hump right there on the surface manure at 280? That gives you an idea of aromaticity. And when you get higher values over here, that's an indication that your organic matter is getting more complex, it's more stable. And if you want any more information about this, this is a flagrant advertisement for this new book out by the societies. And so there's a chapter on this particular topic in there. So this is what our nitrous oxide fluxes look like. In general, they were pretty low, except for in summer. That summer of 2014, we had fluxes all the way up to 100 grams, or milligrams, sorry, per meter squared per hour. So that's huge. So it's really highly variable. The average was 4.8 with big standard deviation. Range was 0 to 101. Summer emissions were 9.4 milligrams per square meter per hour. Winter were 0.8 with a medium of 0.32 and a mode of 0. So most of the time there was hardly any coming off, but when it did come off, it came off big. And it was absolutely not normally distributed. I tried every transformation I could think of. Nothing worked. This is busy, but this is fall-winter manure properties and how they were correlated to our emissions. And we looked at both the loose manure and the packed manure. And temperature was highly correlated, as you would expect, as were nitrate content of the packed manure, available carbon in the packed manure, and this E2 to E6 in the loose manure. And so there are quite a few significant variables. Looking at the same thing in summer, hardly nothing was correlated. And I was just left wondering, what the heck is going on with that? So usually when you're talking about emissions, you want to think about temperature and moisture. And so in fall and winter, there is a tendency for, as temperature increased, you get higher emissions. And the moisture content of the packed manure is pretty stable. So there wasn't really a very clear correlation there at all. And spring and summer, all over the map. It couldn't make heads or tails of it. So I just really didn't know what to do with that. We did some modeling. This first model, we have our N2O flux, and these are the sampling dates. And this model one is a function of pack nitrate concentration, temperature, and your percent water content in the loose surface manure. And we did a pretty good job of modeling the low values, but just couldn't capture this. So we're clearly missing some key element in this. The regression, the R-squared, was pretty low, 0.12, but it was a significantly good model according to the ANOVA. The model 2 here is the same thing, except I included some of those organic matter characteristics as well as available carbon. And you can see it did a somewhat better job, but still we are missing those values there. So there's a lot of work left to do. Sorry, Rob. So uncertainties and what's next. What we don't know is how much diffusion we're getting through that dense manure pack up into the surface. And that's something we need to look at. What are the specific mechanisms? What's the community composition? These cattle are fed antibiotics. Is it fungal? Is it bacterial? Are these results being confounded by the chamber methods, or are we creating microenvironments and disturbing the integrity of the manure pack? So we're currently doing some lab incubations under controlled conditions to try and figure out how these specific things come into play. And going to also evaluate some process models to see if they can do a good job of predicting them. So in conclusion, our measured nitrous oxide fluxes were highly variable. They averaged 4.8 milligrams per meter squared per hour, which is equivalent to about 0.63 kilograms per animal per year. Emissions were related to many properties in fall and winter, but almost nothing in spring and summer. Both the loose and the packed manure characteristics were related to nitrous oxide emissions in fall and winter. We could empirically model the low fluxes The model was somewhat improved when you included those organic matter characteristics. We couldn't model the summer fluxes, and we do need to do some lab studies to characterize these emissions under controlled conditions. And with that, I'll take any questions if we have time.
An elevated temperature effect in these, and then your mm-hmm. concentrations will be elevated beyond what's normal.
Right.
Did you do any extensive testing to see if you have over elevated concentrations of nitrous, which could be explain your high concentrations?
We did not do that, and there's also the issue if it rains, you know, typically you're going to get water spreading out on a feed yard surface. If it rains in a chamber, it's stuck in a chamber. So
and
it's going to be, it's going to be wetter. So there's some issues.
And the chambers go how deep? I mean, they're just going into the dry
pack.
The bases are inserted 75 millimeters into the manure pack. The chambers themselves are 200 millimeters in diameter. They're only on for 30 minutes. They're white plastic, white PVC, so they do heat up a little bit inside, but not... they're not on for that long, but I think that they're substantially influencing the environment inside.
Yeah, I think it's a small chamber.
Yes.
It's one is too small as the chamber that really is plastic. And also, when you insert it into the animal manure pack, you physically disturb.
Absolutely.
The animal pen, and therefore disturb the N2O emission. All sorts of things, and high available, that's too small.
Mm-hmm.
We even use the half meter square, but still small. Also, even if you put a good data, so how representative this data will be, because you show the footer, how available the manure in within a canyon, where do you put a chamber?
Right.
Where is the location? So that's what my talk today. I think the voluntary theoretical work is really good idea. Develop a model. I think that's the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And then combination with the procedure we discussed is a market minimum loss to measurement.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So you expressed the N2O emissions on that per area basis,
mm-hmm.
and I wonder if you are able to determine how much manure nitrogen is actually in the chamber in terms of weight, mass, because that would have an effect on the emissions.
Yeah, we could certainly, we've got all that data. You know, if you figured out the area, the depth, you could go back through and see how much you're actually losing.
In terms of kilograms of nitrogen
right.
chamber as opposed to surface area, which would not necessarily be the defining factor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. There's just a lot of uncertainty in how much is actually coming through the pack, and it's unclear at this point. It's difficult to take cores without breaking them. They tend to break and create fractures. So it's a challenge.
Okay.
All right, thank you.